Brendan Reed from Chula Vista talk about his interesting program that takes heat island mitigation and implements it through an adaptation plan.
So thank you, and hopefully everyone can see the slides. I guess no news is good news if I don't hear anything. But my name is Brendan Reed. I'm with the City of Chula Vista. I'm actually the Environmental Resource Manager. And one of my main responsibility is coordinating the city's climate action program.
Brendan.
Yeah.
We actually don't see your slides.
Oh, let's see. So I don't see a prompt.
Let me resend it to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, sorry. There you go.
And audience, as we're working through this, if you can, you know, take the time to think about questions you might have, that would be great. All right, Brendan, you're good to go.
Okay. So one of my main responsibilities is coordinating the city's climate action program. But I did want to acknowledge it's really there's a whole team in the city, and I know a number of them are listening in. And I think that's one of the keys to our city's success is that really every city department plays a big part in implementing and designing our climate action program. So as mentioned, my presentation is really about, in our circumstance, how we've linked heat island reduction activities to our climate adaptation planning. So just a little bit about the city of Chula Vista, to put it in context. We are in southern San Diego County in California, so we're kind of bottom left on the map, and we're 7 miles north of the U.S.-Mexico border, and we're the second largest city in our county with about 250,000 residents. We have a very diverse population, socioeconomically, ethnically, as well as the landscape. You'll see on the bottom left a picture of our city. And I mainly just show that it's a great kind of microcosm for climate action programs because, you know, we have a bayfront, we have a sort of a ring of open space, we have a lot of urban wildland interface, and we're a growing city, so we do have some greenfield development. And then the other thing I just have on here is in the spirit of Olympics, Chula Vista is also the proud home of the U.S. Olympic team's only year-round warm weather multi-sport facility, so that's one of our claims to fame. Our climate action program goes back a long way, actually, on the mitigation side to the 1990s. We were one of the first cities to work with ICLEI, and of course, as sort of alluded to in the previous presenter's talking points, was that we were mainly focused on greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And we do sort of all the typical things that cities do for that. But a couple years ago, the whole idea of climate adaptation planning sort of was brought to our attention. And, of course, this is an effort to reduce future risks and costs from climate change impacts. You know, there's enough greenhouse gases up in the atmosphere that, you know, impacts are already happening and those will be amplified in the future. And so locally, we can expect things like increased average temperature of about 5 degrees, especially in the summer, sea level rise over a foot, increased water and electricity demand, and more frequent and intense wildfires. So the way the City of Chula Vista approaches our climate action program, of which climate adaptation is a part, is it's really a stakeholder-driven process. About 2 years ago, I guess it is, we convened a stakeholder group, what we call the Climate Change Working Group, and it had 15 representatives from utilities, NGOs, the business community, just residents, educational facilities, and they were really charged with identifying vulnerabilities to our city from climate change and identifying strategies to address those vulnerabilities. And on the screen here, you'll see there were 7 focus areas that the group was working in. And one of the things to highlight is when I was preparing for this presentation, you know, urban heat island issues are really part of most of these. For example, in energy management, of course, with urban heat island impacts, that increases local energy demand for cooling loads. As far as public health, it was already mentioned, increased temperatures lead to, you know, ground level ozone and smog. In the business and economy sector, we found that, you know, increased temperatures impact workers' health and businesses' utility costs. Water demand, of course, increases. Most of our water is used for outdoor landscaping. If it's warmer, you have to water more. And then a very serious threat in Southern California is higher temperatures and how that drives wildfire-prone conditions. So there's just this really strong nexus we found with urban heat island mitigation, if you will, and climate adaptation planning. I did also want to point out that the San Diego Foundation, a local foundation, provided a lot of support to us in this exercise. They actually created a study that summarized and synthesized what the local impacts would be in 2050 for our region. And then, of course, ICLEI provides a lot of support to local governments in climate action planning. So after a year-long stakeholder process, the working group came up with 11 strategies. And those strategies were actually unanimously approved by our city council. And we've been implementing those strategies for about a year. And three strategies actually have to do with urban heat island impacts. So that's what I just wanted to go a little bit further in and summarize some of the early implementation that we've had in those areas. The first part being cool paving. Our stakeholder group recommended that streets and parking lots, both public and private, use cool paving materials. So how, and of course that means, you know, materials that have increased albedo or solar reflectance index. And so we've sort of broken down this into three steps, and the first being conducting a sort of a white paper study on the different technologies and their applications that would be applicable to the city of Chula Vista, and conducting a cost-benefit analysis. So we've actually have a draft study that we've had a consultant put together for us, and it's looking at, you know, for new versus existing streets, you know, what are some of the potential cool paving technologies versus maybe applications for parking lots. It's also looking at, especially in the sort of cost-benefit arena, some trade-offs and synergies. So there could be materials that, like pervious pavement that has a pretty good urban heat island mitigation effects, but it also has a co-benefit of stormwater management. So we hope to, I think, finalize that study in the next 2 months, and that'll help guide the next two steps, which is using or demonstrating some of those products out in the field to collect more information, and then eventually to create new city specs that would be, you know, put into the city's capital improvement projects and potentially the development specifications for private development. We have worked a lot with sort of internal stakeholders. So we our engineering department leads up a pavement management coordination team. So there's a lot of internal stakeholders in the different departments involved with that, as well as, you know, we're reaching out to our public commissions, like our Development Oversight Committee and our Resource Conservation Commission. The second project or program that we're looking at is Cool Roofs. And the working group recommendation, the stakeholder group recommendation was to make all new residential homes have cool roofs. And that, we say residential homes, that's really the majority of our development in our city, at least in the future. And they recommended that we revise our local green building standard to do this. So one of the things that we learned is that in the state of California, you actually have to go through the California Energy Commission to seek approval to do this because, in essence, you're messing with the energy code. So as part of that effort, you know, the city did complete a cost-effectiveness study where we looked at requiring this and looking at the energy cost savings and how long it would take with those savings to repay the incremental costs of having a cool roof. And we found that for single-family homes, for example, really it cost probably $75 extra to have a cool roof versus a traditional roof, and that's probably an overestimate. And in a lot of cases, we found that there was no additional cost at all. And that payback period was as short as 3 years. That's pretty good for a tile roof that will probably last you 30 years. So as a result of that effort, the city did adopt a new standard that requires all new low-rise residential units, that's single-family and multifamily, to incorporate cool roofs with a SRI over or equal to 78. And that sort of tier is linked to a California Green Building Standard that's voluntary in most of the state, but basically we're making that component mandatory. Again, we worked with a lot of stakeholders in this. I already mentioned the California Energy Commission, and then there was two commissions at the city related to building permits and development that we also received feedback on. And then the last part is just the shade tree policy. The Climate Change Worker Group recommended that really the city better emphasize canopy-forming trees in its public and private projects. So this was a new policy that the city council adopted, and in parking lots it requires 50% shade cover of all parking stalls within 15 years. It also allows alternative forms or sort of alternative cover options, meaning one can do cool paving instead of shade tree cover, or one could put in a solar carport. There's also a part in the shade tree policy that tries to emphasize the preservation of existing trees by giving a sort of a higher credit towards keeping them. So that's a policy that actually is now in place. So I just have my last slide here. I just wanted to kind of overview some lessons learned. One big thing was that in our case, we found, a really strong link with heat island reduction activities and our climate adaptation planning. It was a very natural fit. And because in our city, our climate action program is really the umbrella for a lot of our sustainability initiatives, it was really great to see that now where we're addressing urban heat island impacts through that. Of course, a stakeholder-driven process makes it a lot easier for staff when it comes to bringing it in front of our policymakers and our elected officials. And it actually was the stakeholder group that literally presents their recommendations and their strategy. So that was a great thing to see it being a bottom-up approach. Definitely we found benefit in stressing all the great things that happen when you address urban heat island impacts. Again, cool paving could also address stormwater management and those things. Definitely a thing that we're finding is a need for some more long-term monitoring of sort of these policies and these programs. For instance, we're looking at pavement, cool pavement, and it's really hard to find sort of the long-term monitoring results of, cool paving out in the field. This is a major asset for our city, and we need to make sure that we're completely aware and understand sort of long-term impacts to maintenance and those things. So that's something that we're finding a need for. And finally, we really want to institutionalize these policies and programs into sort of the city's business culture. I always say that I never want to see, climate adaptation planning as a separate budget line item in a CIP project, because I'm sure that's one of the first things to get value engineered. But we want to have this be integrated into our specs, into the way we do business in the city. And then I just have a final slide that will hopefully pop up here, and it's just a funding acknowledgement. We have a great partnership with our local utility and the Public Utilities Commission at the state, and they provided a lot of the funding for the three program areas that I showed, mainly because of the nexus with potential energy savings. So thank you again for having the City of Chula Vista participate.
No, that was a wonderful presentation, and thank you for closing with your partnerships and funding connections. I think that is something that addresses some of the concerns that we heard through the poll questions earlier. And if you do have additional questions for Brendan or Brian Stone, please do submit those. What we'd like to hear about, I mean, one thing that Brendan closed with was, heat island mitigation and even larger sustainability initiatives should be integrated into the culture and the business of the city. And while that's certainly our end goal, through Brendan's presentation, we did hear about the connection between adaptation, adapting to the changing climate, and to the heat island mitigation. So we know a lot of communities in the past have experience with climate mitigation work. What we'd like to get a sense of now is how many communities out there are thinking about adaptation, thinking about how to prepare for the changing environment, which includes some the extreme heat waves that we're seeing more of, as Brian pointed out, we're seeing more of these over the last few decades. So where are you when it comes to climate adaptation? Are you talking about it, starting to think about it, developing a plan, assessing impacts, starting to focus in on your strategies? If we could please see the results. So it looks like most people are in the early stages, and they are starting to talk about it, and then also thinking about which adaptation strategies may work best. So if you are addressing heat impacts, certainly today's presentations and especially the model that Chula Vista provided could be helpful to move the work in your communities forward. Thank you for taking the time to answer the poll question.